that was a massive win against Seattle, who are the cream of the crop in the NFC West.
Yeah.
But you're right, Metcalf doing that. And in a way, you know, it was the right move. It was a great move. It was an inspiring move. But it right. highlights every other wideout and every other running back in football on any turnover. Because 95% of the time, you just kind of quit on the play.
Yeah, just gone.
Yeah, you're like, well, that's not my – I didn't throw the interception. Tell the quarterback to go tackle the guy. You know? And
you're right.
I know every coach around the league is using that as an example. If DK Metcalf did it, you can do it. You can, you know, make sure you don't quit on a play.
I just wish I had that type of athletic ability. Like to see him run close like that. Like, I don't know. I've never been able to run. I'm not a great runner and anything like that. It was just... I don't know why I thought it was inspiring.
It was inspiring. It's not going to change anything in my life. I was inspired for a split second, and now I'm not inspired anymore.
I agree.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here is Ray Ferraro. Ray, you got the new wheel. Are you inspired to run like DK Metcalf last night, or what?
If I could, I would.
Yeah.
I laughed how you described your inspiration, though. Yeah, like for half a second, you were inspired.
Yeah, I'm not inspired anymore.
Just think of this, Noodles. So, like, Hayes realizes he's going to be late for, like, you know, like to get on the air.
Yeah.
And so he's inspired to get there. And as soon as he gets there and says, hey, welcome back, he's not inspired anymore.
No, I'm done. My inspiration is short-lived, pretty much.
He's like, yeah, we're all on the air. We're fine.
Yeah.
We'll be good.
We made it.
I thought it was amazing. You know what I loved about it? I mean, like, clearly he's got the physical gift to do it, right? But which is a blessing in itself.
Right.
But somewhere along those 80 yards that he's running, he had to be going, this is kind of stupid because – I'm not going to catch him till like the 5-yard line. Then they're only 5 yards away.
Right.
Like, you know, he still had to have the willpower to drive his legs. And what I found really interesting was it was just a couple of weeks ago against Dallas. He got kind of embarrassed. Right. He should have scored and he didn't.
That's right.
And people were just ripping him. Like, how could he do this? He'll never live this down. And you're like, man, the guy's a rookie. Like, if he's a good player, he'll make another play somewhere along the line and never live this. Never's a long time. And then 2 weeks later, he's on every play for his effort. So he got kicked in the pants and he went, that's never happening again. I'm assuming he went, I will never be on that side of the highlight again.
And what he did last night
was just, like, that was incredible.
Yeah, it really was.
Did you guys see the big... Larry Allen, the lineman.
That was even more amazing because he's like 320 pounds.
Big boy. How much does that big boy weigh?
Yeah. 300 if he's a pound and chugging.
He was moving and shaking too. That should inspire you, Hayes.
That does.
That guy, that should inspire you longer than a second because he was moving.
Yeah.
And I we forget how athletic these gentlemen are at any weight. Because, you know, we're sitting here on our couch and, you know, some guys are big guys, but you forget, like, a guy who's like 260 or 310 can run this speed. Like, it is amazing. How big do you think? Is he 300?
Larry Allen? Oh, yeah. I would say if he's not, he's 280, 290. I mean, we're splitting hairs.
What I love is when, like, a linebacker makes a play and then they flash up, you know, the headshot of him and, you know, Texas A&M, you know, 5'11", 257. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, did you see how fast that guy was? Could you imagine getting hit by a guy that weighs 257 pounds running that fast?
Well, that's it, right? Like, you think of a guy like Ray Lewis or Brian Urlacher or, you know, those guys who were, like, middle linebackers and are built like compact trucks. Like, they're 6 feet. They can't be that tall, but they've got a low center of gravity. They're 5'11", 6 feet, 260, 1% body fat, and they hit to kill. You know, like, they're like, we're taking on – because on the other side of it is a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, who is the same size and running at the same pace, and he's trying to hold on to the ball, and he finds a gap in the line, and he's going through, and the other guy's on the other side coming through to stop him. Like, it's just – That's why everyone says, like, if you haven't seen football live, it's not even seeing football live. It's hearing football live.
Yeah.
Like, you got to hear football live to understand how hard these guys are hitting each other and the size of these human beings.
Again, I like my coach. I like my coach for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
You know, like, so you got a, you know, a 220-pound running back or 215-pound running back, and they're low and they're, you know, and they're, you know, like, just think of the energy that they have to have on both sides of the ball. Like, you know, you got to tackle with some anger. You got to run with edge, and then they come together. No, thank you.
It's a mentality, yeah. Right? Like, it's a very small amount of people that can do it.
I'd like to be that Buffalo kicker with the eye black under one eye.
Yeah.
That would be me.
6 field goals, and he's the king of Western New York now. Because, hey, you're kicking it through the upright. A win is a win is a win.
And Buffalo continues to just chip away.
Yep.
You know, they're right there. Like
But they're getting nervous in Buffalo Noodles. Like, you only beat – this is how bad the Jets are. You only beat the Jets by 8. And, again, you can't register a touchdown, which they didn't. It's concerning. And Buffalo has been 5-2. It feels like every year they're 5-2 and they finish 6-10, 7-9. You know, they did that for 20 years.
So you're worried for Buffalo.
Well, I'm not as worried because the Pats, I think, are fading, right? So it's a different division. If it was still the Brady-Belichick Patriots, I'd be very concerned for Buffalo because they may only be a 9-win team. You know, they might, and that might be enough to win the division. Like 9-7 might win.
Speaking of Brady, did you see the Peyton Manning going over white?
Outstanding.
Oh, my gosh. That guy, his I don't know what it is, but it just cracks me up to no end to listen to him being, like, his timing, his comedic timing. It, you know, he knows it's the fifth read. He's been running the play since 2000.
Right.
That's and if he wouldn't have broke into the wrong guy's house, like, who writes that
it's
stuff?
It's so good. It's so well done. And that's why ESPN was willing to pay him $20 million a year or whatever to get into the booth. Everyone wants Peyton Manning because they know, A, he's as smart as everyone else, if not smarter. He knows every single play that's ever been drawn up in the history of football, and he's got a sense of humor. You know, he's self-deprecating. He'll goof on guys, and he can goof on guys. And, like, Brady's not going to be like, hey, relax, Peyton. You know, he'll laugh, too. It's Peyton Manning. Peyton can say whatever he wants. You know,
if he didn't break into the wrong house that looked like Byron Leftwich's, he wouldn't have had to promise the guy he could call the plays.
It was so good. It's so good online. We were talking last hour, you know, because we're kind of in wait and see mode with the NHL and the schedule. And I kind of am sensing or thinking, reading the tea leaves, that this is going to play out kind of like baseball did. I just hope it's not as volatile publicly. And I get the impression like they're trying to avoid that because Larry Brooks, I guess, cracked the case or whatever and wrote that piece yesterday about the GM call last week. But Brooks reported that Bettman had told all the GMs, like, don't say a word to anyone. So they're trying to keep everything in-house. They're trying to work out all the details. But with baseball, it turned out after the fact, once we knew what the schedule was going to be, Rob Manfred basically tipped his hand and said, I always knew it was going to be 60 games. You know, it was just a matter of getting there. And for whatever reason, they allowed each other to bicker at each other publicly. And it was a PR nightmare. I kind of feel like the same thing's going to happen here, Ray, with the NHL. Like, they know they're not playing 82. They know it's going to be, like, 60 games or whatever. And it's like, you got to play this dance. And now we're trying to figure it out. And it's like, just get there. Tell us it's going to be 60. You're going to start on January 10th. And let's start playing here.
You know what, Brian? I think they would if they knew they could. Mm-hmm. The problem is you can set a date and it's really just something on the calendar because this is all going to get determined, like the length of season and all that, not by the league. It's going to be whatever the virus is doing, whatever the governments are allowing as far as border crossing, whatever, you know, like whatever they're going to allow in the stadiums, if anybody, like all that stuff is going to really determine, you know, what the final answer is. I can't believe that Gary Bettman will be as much or will be stumbling around as much as Rob Manfred did. Like, Manfred screwed up at every turn. Mm-hmm. Like, whether you agreed with the owners or the players, he never once came across like he was really in charge. And so whether he can keep enough owners, you know, tight to the message, whether they can do enough negotiating with the players to determine how much of the salary is going to get paid, you know, if all of it or part of it or whatever it's going to be, that's going to be a large portion, I think, of this time between now and whenever they announce what the season is going to be, is going to be trying to maneuver around behind the scenes as much as they can. Because baseball looked like a clown show.
Yeah, that was a mess. On both sides, too. The players are playing video games, and they're like, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know. This was on both sides. Mm-hmm. But the leadership from the league has to at least project a plan.
Right.
Where it didn't seem like baseball ever had it. And yet here they are, they've somehow worked their way through, and they're gonna crown a World Series champion here pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's ended up well for baseball considering how big of a nightmare it was early. But, you know, I keep coming back for me and thinking, when I talk to guys in the league, they're all like, the one common theme I've gotten from them is Groundhog Day. Like, Ray, you and I went through the lockout, I think, what was that, 94? I think that was.
Yeah.
Remember, we were training early, and then it kind of faded because every day you just wanted information, and you're like, okay, what's happening? And mentally, it was a struggle. I talked to some guys right now, and they're in shape, obviously. Guys are in shape nowadays. They're going to be in shape regardless. But, you know, I know January 1st is a placeholder as far as a date, but the guys I talked to are like, yeah, it'd be nice to just know, like, hey, we're starting this date. I can work backwards from that. But it's almost like it's a wait and see. And they went through it already. Like, the 24 teams have gone through that wait and see. And let's see how it goes. And some teams stumbled out of the gate. You know, I don't think everyone was in great shape the minute that they got into the bubble and started playing. Because there were some guys, I think, that got fatigued mentally trying to, like, almost waiting
for, like, up,
yeah,
right?
Picking
your spots. And
yeah, I feel like that may happen here again leading up to it. I know it's out of people's hands, but, like, the players I talked to are like, yeah, you know, I'm skating, I'm working out, I'm doing that, but you can tell there's not that excitement because they don't have something to work toward, like a concrete date.
Well, I know a couple of guys that a few weeks ago they were skating three times.
Yeah.
And then they went, oh, this is stupid. And they put their gear away, and then they just started skating again. You know, like, they stopped for a couple of weeks. They're like, why am I skating?
Yeah. Right.
Like, we're months away from needing to skate. At least they know that. But just to what you say, Jamie, it's like it all seems kind of pointless, except they know it's not pointless.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I got to be in shape. Well, when? I don't know. And they all know nobody has an answer. Like, they can ask whoever they want. The trainer can't tell them. The coach can't tell them. Their agent can't tell them. Heck, the government can't tell them.
Right.
And so it's, I think it's unfortunately something they're going to have to deal with. And I think we saw, like, coming into the bubble there, you know, Boston was a mess. When they got in there, they played poorly. They had a couple of guys that were sick and a couple of guys that were banged up. And they never probably got things. Like, they were the best team in hockey in the middle of March.
Yeah.
And then when they came back, they weren't the best team.
No.
And that could very well be the case for whatever this upcoming season is. Remember, when we came back, out of nowhere, the New Jersey Devils won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
In 95. They had Jacques Lemaire had the best system, the best the best players to execute that system, and they smothered us all, checked us into oblivion, and then they won the Stanley Cup. And so somebody will have a plan. Somebody will be more prepared or better prepared than others. And heck, enough, if it's a 48 or 60 game season, if you play your first 30 games really well, you're probably locked in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's exactly. That's what's happened the last couple of times. There have been shortened seasons, right? Like, the Leafs punched their ticket in 2013. They hadn't been in the playoffs in 8 years.
And were they, like, technically on paper, did you think they were a playoff team going into that season?
I wasn't thinking playoffs at that point, not based on the previous couple of years, no. And I remember it was basically like you just said, where they had a good start. They just kept chipping away. And then all of a sudden it was like mathematically they're going to get there. You know, they just a couple of ties, maybe a win or two against a bad team and you're in. And, you know, in a shortened year, generally the two ends of the spectrum separate that much more. Or if you're a bad team in a shortened season and you know it 15 games in, you're like,
oof,
we're just going to mail. It's only 25 more games. What are we doing? You know, like, we don't really have, like, it seems like there's going to be even more of a separation or potentially. I get the impression, like, the Flames think that Vancouver has won the last five Stanley Cups based on
got four guys
their offseason.
I know, Ray. What's it like out there? Because I saw it was trending a few times. What do they call it? The Calgary Canucks, right? Because it's
right.
Like you've got
one of my buddies tweeted. Sorry, Jamie.
Yeah.
One of my buddies tweeted. Look for transactions next week. The Flames might sign Finn. That's the mascot.
Yeah, they're scouting him right now. They're having meetings about that.
Yeah, I saw
but
that.
I got to tell you, I know teams didn't have remarkable amounts of money, but Calgary spent big on Markstrom and Tanev, and then they've signed about four or five guys, all on real low-end contracts that if three of them pan out, they've really improved their team.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you guys, when Josh Levo got hurt, he was well on his way to being a legit middle six forward. And then he got shoved into the boards from behind and broke his kneecap. It was a bad hit. And he lost the rest of his year. At 875, I think that's a terrific signing for Calgary. Like, I think it's really good.
Yeah. No, he found himself in Vancouver. Like, he would perform well. Levo did when he was in Toronto. He just didn't get the opportunity. You know, Babcock wouldn't put him in.
He was buried at the... Well, wasn't he the guy who sat out like 70 games? No, that was Frankie Corrado.
Corrado was the one that... Frankie got hit the hardest.
Yeah, Corrado was first, and then it was Levo.
Yeah, Levo went a long time in between games.
Those guys were... Oh, no, and then... Okay, where did Justin Hall fit into that?
Hall was the same thing.
He was the same thing.
Was he the same year as Levo?
No, I think
Levo had been gone. Because Levo, I think Dubas...
Those guys were practicing their ass off and never playing.
Were. Yeah, and I think Dubas told Levo, like, if you don't get in to start the year, we'll ship you out. And he, I think, followed through on that and then flipped them to Vancouver. So, you know, that was a year. I'm losing sight of time here because of everything.
Yeah.
But they overlapped the Hall and Levo, and definitely not the Corrado stuff. That was a couple of years ago. But Levo just never found a way to get into the lineup. But when I would see him in Vancouver, I'm like, hey, he looks like, you know, he's an NHL player for sure.
Oh, he was a legit middle six guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, you know, when he got hurt, that really was a blow to Vancouver. Their depth really took a hit.
Which is surprising they couldn't sign him for $900,000.
Well, that's what nobody can quite figure this out, because he was asking for just over $1 million. The Canucks wanted it to be under $1 million, and then he signed in Calgary for $875,000.
Yeah,
it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, and if he can give you he had 10 last year. If he could give you 10 to 15 goals in a full season, averaged out, like that's third line minutes on the wing. Like he's a big, strong guy. I do remember him playing some penalty kill and stuff with the Leafs. I don't know what that would be the case in Calgary. But like you said, Ray, these are low-value signings. Like you can bury that in the minors if he doesn't make your team. Same thing with Jimmy Vesey in Toronto. There's been some nice signings throughout the league. But I think Calgary had a couple. Dominic Simone was a guy who they signed out of Pittsburgh. Like low-value. And maybe there's upside there. And if it doesn't, you've got to put some money in the minors. Or if it sounds like it's a shortened season and there's no AHL like to match it.
It'll be a taxi squad.
These guys might be right there on the taxi squad, exactly.
Yeah, I think most teams are looking at that, and they should be taking advantage, especially the ones with owners who are willing to spend a little more money. Anyway, we got to fly, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Talk to you then. See you guys.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days continue with rates from 0% and free winter tires with every in-stock new vehicle purchase in October. MapleToyota.com.